mercy.
I could just go home right now. How about you girls? I just want to say what a privilege, and I am emotional, and so I have my tissue. I did take my medicine today, but I'm just not real sure it's going to work. I also took a diuretic, so if I run off the stage, sorry, Michael and Chris and Rob and Michael up there. Sorry, girls. For those of you who know me, I'm sorry, okay? But anyway, I'll just apologize to begin with. It is such an honor and a privilege for me to stand on the same platform as these two women who have blessed my heart this morning so much, and I just thank you for what you've shared, and for Michael and Linda and the singers and everybody, and Rob and my cousins and everybody. Y'all are not going to believe this, but I have actually prayed for an opportunity to be able to, I didn't know how it was going to happen, but God knew, to thank this church for what it has meant to me. I was raised in Arkansas and born into a wonderful Christian family. And my little parents, we called them the little people because they were really short. I mean, affectionately, we called them that. Were the first people to teach me about love. And they fleshed out for me every day love of God, love of church, love of your family. And, you know, when Susan asked me to talk about love, I thought, well, my word, we're going to have to go to the beach for a month and do a word study on love. I mean, where do you go with that? Agape or philos or anything? But what I wanted to talk to you about today is how God's love is so evident and so present through his people. And specifically for me in my life, it has been the people of Shades Mountain Baptist Church. And I've told people before, if I came up here and washed windows for the rest of my life, I could never repay the people who have done so much for me personally, for my husband and myself and our marriage, and for our family. And I'm going to really try hard not to cry. But anyway, I was raised in a Christian home, but I'll have to tell you, and my little precious parents just, I mean, to the day my mother couldn't walk again, my daddy would carry her and open every door. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And Buddy treats me that way, too. You know he does. But but along with that, I had this just crazy idea that nothing bad ever happened to anybody else or to me. That was never going to happen to me. That I just had this you know, white picket fence upbringing. We did not have a lot of money, but I didn't know we were missing anything. You know what I mean? And so I decided Miss Big Britches here, literally and physically. You know, I'm trying to say literally and, you know. But anyway, was going to go 500 miles away from my home and my home church and go to Auburn to school where I knew no one. Well, you know, because I could handle anything because, you know, nothing was going to happen to me. And, you know, how spiritually immature and how youthfully immature. And I had no idea what was ahead of me, but God knew. And through his love for me, he had my life mapped out. He knew exactly what I needed. He knows exactly what you need. And so much of what these women have said, I was going to say, but I don't need to say it. They said it much better than I did. But he knew what I was going to need. So I go to Auburn, have a great time, love it. It's a wonderful experience, blah, blah, blah. And I meet this guy. I become engaged to him. I stay at Auburn 2 extra years and work for the university because I just couldn't leave it. I was having such a good time and all that. And my mother comes to visit, and she tells me that she doesn't think that this man is who I'm supposed to marry, that the Lord has told her this. When a girl's, you didn't argue with Mary Lou. She was Mary Lou Bird Lilly, and let me tell you, you did what she said. But I also knew that God spoke through my mother, and I knew that my mother loved me unconditionally and that she wanted the best for me. So we broke the engagement. He's a wonderful Christian man. He has a great family, but he was not the right one for me. So I come to Birmingham, find a job, and praise the Lord. And because I didn't really want to go back to Arkansas, nothing against my family, but my friends were here. And this friend of mine says, I was looking for churches and I was visiting around, and this friend of mine goes, you need to visit this place called Shades Mountain Baptist. And I said, well, what's so special about Shades Mountain Baptist, you know? He says, you just need to come and experience this place, Becky. I'm telling you, you will love it. So I come to Sunday school, and there was this guy named Danny Wood. Y'all might know him. Danny was one of our Sunday school teachers. We were down in the lower room, which is no longer there, but it probably would have blown up by now anyway, so I'm kind of glad it's not there. But and then I came in here, because this was where we, remember, this was 34 years ago, I guess, 33 years ago. And this was where we had worship. The baptistry's back there and all that. Well, I walked in the door, not knowing anybody, but just two or three people, and I could not believe it. This was a big church to me, because my home church was not this large. This was a big church, and where I had gone to Auburn was not this large. And so I thought, who are these people? They're so nice to me. They don't know me. They don't know my peeps. They don't know where I'm from. You know, I'm not from around here. I don't know these people. And I immediately felt God's love through the people of this church. I'm not kidding, from the first day that I came here. And I called my friend. I said, you are so right. This place is special. And it is special. And it has continued to be special. So I began coming here and developed relationships as a single adult and had wonderful experiences. Some of y'all were in our Sunday school groups, and we just had a great time. And then along comes Buddy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we had a blind date. Germ, a.k.a. Bill Black. We call him Germ. Germ's brother introduced the two of us. And the first time I went out with him, I didn't really like him. But I'm not so sure he liked me either. But, you know, God has mysterious ways of working things out. So we start dating, and we decide to get married. And he joined Shades Mountain as well. Now, Buddy is a pastor's son. Need I say more? But he loved Shades Mountain, and he felt the same thing that I felt here, acceptance and love, and that people really cared about you. So we had a horrible car accident. We were driving to Florida for a weekend, and I won't go into all that, but anyway, once again, I come home. My parents are out of the country, and so who comes to my aid? Who's at my house bringing meals? My Sunday school ladies and girls, you know, checking on me. Do you need anything? Can I take you to the doctor? Blah, blah, blah. And Buddy was very, very touched by that as well. So Buddy and I decide to get married, and we're members here at Shades Mountain, and we're in the new marrieds class, you know. We also go through Master Life, and Lynn's King is here. I decided I couldn't mention names because there are just too many people who have impacted our life, and I didn't want to leave anybody out. But Lynn King was our Master Life teacher, and we have laughed so hard because I think Buddy and I are the only people that have ever failed Master Life in the history of Shades Mountain Baptist. We just had so much trouble with that scripture memory. But anyway, Lynn and Don loved us through it, and I just began to see God's love just poured into our marriage. And I knew there were so many people here that loved and supported us, our teachers and Charles Carter and Aubrey Edwards and all of those people I can't name. I'm not going to go into names, but anyway. So Buddy and I are a little older when we get married. I was 26 and he was 28, and we decided to start our family. Well, you know, nothing ever happened to me, so, you know, I'm kind of out of it, and life's good, life's great, blah, blah, blah. Well, I couldn't get pregnant, and I couldn't get pregnant, and I couldn't get pregnant, I couldn't get pregnant. So 6 years, we try to have a child. And for those of you who have experienced infertility, I want to tell you my heart goes out to you. It is a very depressing time. Everyone you know and everyone you see at the grocery store, at the mall, at work, wherever, is pregnant. And you're going, okay, all I've ever wanted to do was be a stay-at-home mom and raise my children. So God, what is your message here? And God was teaching me contentment through that I needed to learn to trust him, and that he loved me more than anything and anybody, and that he had a plan for my life. Well, I have surgery. Buddy has surgery. We finally get pregnant. And I was obnoxious. And for those of you who were here then, I just apologize right now. I was obnoxious. I think Buddy was even obnoxious. We were so excited. Once again, this church embraced us. So because of my age and some medical situations, we were scheduled to have a C-section. And everybody was so excited and praying for us and were so precious to us. My parents came down from Arkansas. Buddy's parents were here from Daveville. And so at 7:14 on a Friday morning, and I probably will cry now, our son was born. And I had a C-section, like I said, and by the state of law, you have to have your pediatrician in there. Well, Woodson, James Woodson C was his name, and he didn't cry. And I thought, well, that is so weird. But, you know, it was my first baby, and I thought, I don't know anything. But I could tell by the look on Buddy's face. Buddy is my rock. He is very, well, I can't go on about Buddy. I will cry. But anyway, he is a precious gift from God in my life. And I could just tell by the look on his face that something was wrong. And then I saw Dr. Paul Hill take him over to this little table and start working frantically. And I hadn't even been able to hold him. And I was going, what is going on with my baby? And when I looked, the color of his lower body was about the color of that wall over there. And I thought, well, something's not right. So Buddy comes over and pats me. He said, honey, everything's all right. You know, he'll be fine. And so all of a sudden, they whisk Buddy and the baby off and say, we're going to take your baby to UAB, where we were at St. Vincent's, and he said, Buddy's going to ride in the ambulance with him, and he'll be fine. We're going to do a few tests. There seems to be something wrong. So off Buddy goes, and, you know, my poor mother and dad and Buddy's parents are in the waiting room. Well, you all know what that's like when you have grandparents who hurt twice as much as you do because they hurt for you and the children. And everybody was, you know, kind of hysterical, but somebody called the church. I don't know who it was. I don't know if it was one of you. I thank you for that. But somebody called the church and told them that our baby was in trouble. So Buddy gets to the emergency room, and I am not lying to you. I mean, not the emergency room. He gets to UAB, the quarterback tower area. They take Woodson up at 2 hours old and start running all these tests. And all of a sudden, all of these people from Shades Mountain Baptist Church show up at the quarterback tower and start praying for my son. And so anyway, he goes into surgery at 7 hours of age. And Charlotte Autry, I am going to mention your name because she worked for the man who was Woodson's surgeon, Al Pacifico, who is now retired. But I mean, whew, that man is tops on my list, obviously. But Buddy, bless his heart, was over there coming back and forth, giving me reports, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't know how he did it. But anyway, he came and said, Becky, they're going to operate on Woodson. He has an interrupted aortic arch, which means he has a piece of his aorta missing, which is why he didn't have good color and he didn't cry. But he said, you know, he said, Becky, he said, I just feel really good about this. He said, because God brought Woodson into the world via a C-section, which had he gone the other way, it would have been too traumatic for him. He possibly wouldn't have made it. He said, the doctor told me that if we had been as far away as Sylacauga, that Woodson might not have made it because they needed to rush everything along. The other thing he told me was, he said, this surgeon is supposed to be ambidextrous. It's almost like he's ambidextrous in the operating room. He is so fast at what he does. So we've got all these good things going for us. And, you know, here I am. Everything's going to be okay. That's what I'm thinking because that's what I've thought my whole life, you know. But I also knew that my church family was praying for us. And I knew my church family was praying for my son. So Woodson makes it through the surgery, which was huge. Because we found out later that at that time, now I don't know about now, only 1 in 10 children with this anomaly live. Because you can't live without blood flowing to the lower part of your body. I'm not a doctor, but I do know that. So he's in the CIC unit, and we can only see him every 4 hours. Well, I'm still in the hospital because I've had a C-section. And so who comes with Buddy to visit our baby? My parents, his parents, and our friends from Shades Mountain Baptist Church. Not just the pastors, but our Sunday school teachers. And so many of you were there with us. And Woodson gets stronger, and they end up finally, well, let me back up a little bit because this is something that is just, you know, what are the chances, as Danny would say. But the nurse that was Woodson's attending nurse the night after his first surgery was this precious Christian woman who prayed for him all through the night. And while she prayed, she wrote us a letter about him. And she said, I know. She said, don't listen to the numbers. Listen to God because I know God wants your baby to make it. So that woman, Maddie, I tell you, I don't know where she is now. We've lost touch, but my heart just, that was such a comfort when I received that letter knowing that Maddie had been praying for him. Woodson gets a little stronger. He has a feeding tube. He has an incision. I start going to, he's in the other cardiac unit, a step down, and And I go to visit him every day and stay with him most of the day and learn how to do the feeding tube and learn how to clean the incision and that sort of thing. And got to know so many families there who had children like Woodson or had similar situations. They were from all over the world. And let me just tell you, Tanya, what you have done for Lonnie, because there was this one baby buddy and I prayed so hard for his parents were in South Alabama and they never came to see that baby. And here we had all this love and support of people. I couldn't drive. People would come pick me up and take me to the hospital and cry with me. People brought meals. I didn't cook a meal for 12 and a half weeks after Woodson was born. So Woodson gets stronger and stronger, and I'm trying to learn what I'm supposed to do to take care of him. And they decide that he can go home. So he's 7 weeks old by this time, and he comes home. Well, that was not good. We came home, and everybody at the church was so excited, and it was wonderful, and we were all excited and had blue bows and everything. Diane and David Costner were my next-door neighbors, and they were just so excited. And but by about 9:30 or 10 o'clock that night, Woodson started breathing. His labor, breathing very laboriously, if that's a word, started sweating profusely, was very agitated and couldn't get comfortable. And so about 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke Buddy up and I said, he's got to go back. I said, these are the things they told me that would go wrong when he was in trouble. So we go back. And this time, I think it finally dawned on me that my son was really, really sick and that there was a chance he wouldn't make it. So we go back and they immediately start work for surgery. They fly Dr. Pacifico in. He lived out in Shelby County. They flew him in and on their helicopter and got him in there for the surgery, and he was prepping, and he came out and talked to us, and he said, let me just tell you a couple of things. He said, I'm going to go in here. I'm going to do the very best I can, but there are some things that could happen. One, he could have severe brain damage. Two, he could probably have some paralysis. He said, what is going to be the determining factor here? Is last time we patched this time we need to correct it. And they had hoped to wait till he was at least a year old to do the second surgery. But they couldn't at this point. So they go back in, and he said, it's going to depend on what I see when I get in there, about what vessels I can use, because what I want to do, what I need to do, is create an aorta for Woodson. In other words, do a bypass on him. The baby's 7 weeks old. And I'm thinking, how can you do that? But anyway, again, our church family was praying for us. I mean, people out of town on trips and everywhere, everybody was praying for us. And he made it through that second surgery, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. Dr. Pacifico comes out and talks to us, and he says, you're not going to believe this. He said, I got in there. He said, it was the most optimum situation I have ever seen for what I had to do. And that just gives me chills. But he said, I got in there and his left carotid artery was 3 times the normal size of a baby his age. And he said, so it made it the perfect piece for me to use to create an aorta for him. He said, I feel like he's going to do really well. He said, but I've just never seen anything like that. Well, we knew why that had happened. God had a purpose and a plan for our son's life that we had no clue. But let me tell you, it is the most humbling experience to be on the receiving end of the love and the prayers of the people of Shays Mountain Baptist Church. It is something like I have never experienced in my life. But I am so grateful that I've had this experience. I'm sorry for what Woodson had to go through because he's been through a lot. He's 26 now. He is a precious young man. He's coming to the GAP class. We're real excited. We're letting Steve Kilo get a hold of him in the Holy Spirit. But we've been through lots of developmental delays. And what they told us when we left the hospital is, look, we can't give you a lot of information on what to expect about him because so few babies have this kind of problem and so few of them make it. We just don't have a lot of benchmarks. So here's your baby was basically what they were saying. But You know, God has put people continually in our lives. We've had bouts with gastroesophageal reflux. We had great doctors who cared deeply for him and got him through that. We've had speech delays. We've had language delays. We've had physical therapy. We've had learning disabilities. And if any of you have children who have had learning disabilities or have them now, I'm going to put you at the top of my prayer list. Please let me know about it. It can be a very devastating thing to a child. And it's very devastating as they grow up. So, but know that there's hope and that God has a plan and he has a purpose for that child, and cling to that. We get to high school. Woodson's doing pretty well. And we had one of my best friends in the world, who's a wonderful Christian woman in Texas. I call her the total woman because she is. But anyway, she and her sons were visiting in our home, and Woodson had a seizure in the middle of the night, and one of the boys saw it. Well, this was new to us, and I called a doctor friend of ours, who Susan and Henry Hudson came from, because he lives down the street from me, and he called the ambulance. We got him there. And this was a new thing, and yet I had learned early on that God's love was going to get us what we needed and that God was going to take care of this baby. But once again, the people of this church lifted us up, lifted him up. I can't tell you, the young people from the youth group who came to visit him at the hospital that were precious. So, but it was a very demoralizing thing. He couldn't drive for 6 months, and when you're 17 years old, that's a very awful thing. We tried a new school. That didn't work. But physically, he seemed to be doing okay. Emotionally, he was withdrawn, and he had some battles to fight, and we tried to help him fight through those. And that's the other thing I would say about this church family, is that you didn't know it when you were praying for Buddy and me and Woodson, but you were praying for God to equip us, because we didn't know what we were doing. I mean, nobody gave us a book to tell us, you know, how to deal with these different instances that came up. And it was your prayer, all of your prayers, that have helped get us through this. Not that we are model parents by any means, but Woodson had another seizure right before his senior year, and that gave us great cause for concern. He's been on medication since then. He has not had another one. But there again, and we went back through the thing, you can't drive. It was his senior year, which is supposed to be the most fun year of your entire life. We go back to Vestavia so that he could be with his sister, who God sent us. I found out I was pregnant with her 4.5 months after Woodson came home from the hospital. Now, girls, do you not think God had a hand in that? Because I had been through infertility treatments for 6 years to get pregnant with Woodson. But God knew that Woodson needed this older sister who was going to help him along the way. She spurred him on to do things. We've laughed a million times. Had we not had Lily, I don't believe Woodson could tie his shoes right now, because his parents would have done it for him until he was 26 years old. Like we did so many things that, talk about enabler, that's a whole other deal. But anyway, I say all this to say, I look back on my life at Shades Mountain Baptist Church as a single adult, as a young married, as a young mother who didn't know what she was doing, and then had a child who needed extra things, and who had a daughter who didn't need all those things, trying to keep the balance right. I would hand my babies over to those precious women in the nursery and never bat an eye, because I knew they were going to love my kids as much as I did, if not more. And they weren't afraid to take Woodson. They weren't afraid. And then as we go into the preschool ministry, the same thing. And then the children's ministry. What a precious time for my children. You know, I would tell them all the time, I would say, if you can't talk to us about something, let me give you names of these people. When they left to go to college, I gave them a list of names and phone numbers of people. I said, if you can't talk to me about something, these are godly, righteous people who love you and have known you since you were this tall. Well, and middle school ministry, middle school, the worst time in someone's life, I think, sometimes it can be. We go to high school, the youth ministry. I don't know where Woodson would have been. High school was not especially a fun time for him. And if he had not been able to walk in this door and feel loved and cared about for just exactly who he is. And that's what he felt here. I am going to mention this one person's name, and I got his permission, and it's Mike Little. Mike was Woodson's 11th grade Sunday school teacher. And do you know, to this day, he and Woodson email back and forth all the time. It's been a lot of years. I just don't think you find that at every church. I just don't think you find it. And I would have to say to you that I know I speak for Buddy. He kept asking me if I wanted him to come. And I said, well, I think you're going to feel kind of weird, but I don't know if he thought I was going to say something about him, but I thought I was pretty good, don't y'all? But I think he wanted to make sure that I said what needed to be said to thank all of you and to say we don't need to take this for granted. God's love is so real in this congregation, and it's because your love for him is so real, and I know that. You know, God spurs us on to give and give and give. There's a quote that I keep in my Bible all the time. I laugh. My daddy went to be with the Lord last November, and we were cleaning out his Bible. I brought it home, and he had all these things taped in the front of his Bible. I thought, well, that's where I got that. You know, I pray every Sunday over my Bible because I'm afraid everything's going to fall out when Michael's calling us to get up to sing, so, and papers will be flying and all that. But so many of the notes that you all have sent me through the years are in my Bible because I read them and reread them when I have a day that I'm not feeling so good about who I am. But this is something that I've had. Look, it's filthy. I don't know how long I've had it or who gave it to me, but love is the badge that identifies us as a disciple of Jesus Christ. By loving others, we show the world that we belong to him. Jesus loves us when we are least lovely, and we should be willing to do the same. Thank you for loving us when we didn't have lovely spirits. Thank you for rescuing us through some difficult times in our lives. And let's not take the spirit of God's love for granted and what he's given us here at Shades Mountain Baptist Church. Thank you.